Okay, we've been gone a long time, but we're back. I'm sorry for the delay. I'm back now, okay? I had a last-minute trip up to Oregon. It's the kind of trip where you literally have minutes notice to get in the car and drive 13 hours, spend the night, and drive 13 hours back with all the stops, you know? Plus, a night in a hotel where the only thing on Uber Eats was Jack in the Box on Christmas Eve. And then they give you a notification that they're actually closed an hour later, okay? Maybe I'll talk about that later. Maybe not. I don't know. Okay, as always, I'm forced to beg you in the intro for a rating wherever you're listening, be it Apple, Spotify, MySpace, or Grindr. Give it 1 star if you hate it, or 5 stars if you're feeling charitable. Anyways, welcome to episode number Who Gives a Shit of the Valley Boys. I am your host, Dave Weasel. Let's get this over with. All right, so I've decided to give the keto diet another whirl, and let me tell you, it's like signing up to be the star in a horror movie where carbs are the villain lurking in every shadow. Now, last time I was on this diet, you know, I was dropping weight like a politician drops promises after an election. But then, like a tragic hero in a Greek play, my Achilles heel, or should I say Achilles beer, was the seductive hoppy allure of IPAs. Okay, keto, it's like a culinary boot camp. Everything you love, everything that makes life worth living, bread, pasta, the very essence of happiness is ripped away from you. You're left with meat and cheese, and the kind of vegetables that look like they've been picked out of a rabbit's butt. You start treating a piece of bacon like it's a slice of heaven, but deep down, you know you're just in greasy purgatory. And you know what? You kind of get used to it after a while. You get sick of that stuff all the time. And man, you start getting cravings, all right? They hit you. They hit you like puberty hits Screech and Saved by the Bell. You start gazing at a donut like it's a love interest in a rom-com, okay? Complete with the wind machine and the dramatic music. I'm telling you, I've had dreams about cupcakes that were so vivid, I woke up looking for crumbs in the bed. And socializing on keto is like trying to be sober at a frat party. You're there with your sad little plate of cheese cubes, watching your friends, you know, go head first into a sea of nachos and beer. It's like, come on, Dave, just one beer. And they're offering you a ticket to Willy Wonka's factory. But nope, you're standing there holding on to your diet like it's the last lifeboat on the Titanic. Okay? That's all the last time I did keto. I was kind of a model of self-control. I was like a monk, okay? Then one day, I decided to have an IPA because, you know, I'm just a human being. I'm just a mere man. And that IPA was the gateway drug to Carbville, okay? It's like I opened Pandora's box, but instead of unleashing evil onto the world, I unleashed a ravenous carb-craving monster within myself. So before I knew it, I was on a downward spiral, a Dante's Inferno of delicious hoppy beers. Okay, each IPA was a sweet siren song luring me back to the rocky snores of carbohydrate islands. Did I say snores? I meant shores. Whatever, it's like a Shakespearean tragedy. But with me as a flawed protagonist, undone by my own hubris, or in this case, my undying love of beers that tastes like a loaf of bread and a fruit salad had a delicious baby. But whatever, here I am. I'm back on keto. A diet that's basically the culinary equivalent of a nun's vow of chastity, but for carbs. It's like going to a strip club and being told that you can only look at the left elbow of the third dancer on the right. But I persevere, armed with my cheese and my dreams of a thinner waistline. Mourning the loss of my beloved IPA, so those hybe-infused temptresses of the night. Keto can be the path to redemption, but every step is paved with the crushed dreams of pizza that I no longer have. I don't even like IPAs, to be honest. I just drink them. Okay, I drink IPAs, but it's not because I'm some kind of beer connoisseur like everybody else seems to think they are. It's purely economical, you know? It's a bang for your buck. I mean, everyone goes around claiming, I love the taste of beer. It's like, okay, do you actually? Because when you're at your office, you're not sipping on a nice frosty 0% beer at your desk. Nah, man, you're nursing a nice tea like it's the nectar of the gods. Because deep down, you know as well as I do, beer is an acquired taste, all right? We drink beer for the same reason we told ourselves we liked coffee in college. It gets the job done. And IPAs, man, that's an express train to Buzzville. One IPA is equal to what, like 2 regular beers? So when you're picking out a drink and you see that IPA, it's got 8% alcohol content staring back at you, it's like, it's not about the hints of oak and subtle citrus undertones. No, man, it's about efficiency. It's about getting the most return on your investment. Let's be real. No one is casually enjoying an IPA, okay? You don't delicately sip an IPA. You survive it. It's like drinking a pine tree that's been set on fire. But there you are, choking it down, pretending it was exactly what you've been craving, because at the end of the day, it's not about the journey. It's about the destination, which, of course, is simply a less sober version of yourself than when you started. And that is why we drink IPAs. Not for love of the brew, but for love of the buzz, you know? It seems like every brewery and their dog are churning out these IPAs like they're the holy grail of beers, man. And these flavor descriptions, pineapple mango, please, man. It's more like pine cone marinated in grapefruit juice. These things are so bitter, it's like they're made from the tears of someone who's just read their bank statement after a night out at a craft beer bar. And then there's the whole strong beer angle, you know? Oh, it's not just a beer, it's a statement. Look at me, I could drink something that tastes like a forest fire and not flinch. It's kind of a weird flex, but all right. And the strength isn't for the faint of heart either, you know? It's like these beers are specifically engineered to get you to go from zero to whatever, texting your ex in no time. And yeah, they're strong, but it's not a pleasant, relax by the fireplace strong. You know, it's more of a hold on to your balls, this is going to be a bumpy night kind of strong. And the names, dude, every IPA has a name that sounds like a rejected superhero of a failed band from the 90s. You know, Galactic Hop Odyssey was one. Bitter Endgame. Citrus Maximus. It's beer, okay? It's not an epic journey. But here we are, in a world where drinking beer isn't just about enjoying a cold one after work. It's a statement on how hoppy, bitter, and strong you can handle your beverages. It's like a weird initiation ritual into a club of people who pretend they enjoy things that actually taste like licking a lawnmower. Man, people who pretend to enjoy things. I feel like that's Oregon. For Southern Oregon, all right? Okay, so I'll tell you about the trip. Did a mad dash from Southern California to Southern Oregon, which, as I said, is about a 13-hour drive, which, again, I found out with mere minutes' notice, because who needs planning, right? So I get there late at night, and like any sane person, I got to drive back in the next day. That's how it goes. But the thing that gets me every time is how Southern Oregon is like a different planet compared to anywhere else, especially Southern California. Now, people are fleeing Southern California like it's a sinking ship. They're getting tired of the traffic that moves slower than that sloth in the DMV in that cartoon, you know? And the heat, it's like you're living inside a pizza oven. The earthquakes, the rent prices that make you contemplate living in your car, which wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't stuck in traffic all the time. So where do these people go? You know, Southern Oregon is a hot spot for a Southern California exodus because they saw a postcard once and thought, oh, this looks peaceful. But let me tell you something. Southern Oregon isn't like coastal Oregon or its trendy cities like Portland. You know, once you cross those rain-drenched mountains, those terrifying mountains at the California-Oregon border, you're basically stepping into the movie Deliverance. Now, I stayed in Ashland, which, to be fair, is a charming little town in that area. Ashland is what everyone thinks they're getting into when they move to Southern Oregon, a quaint, picturesque little snow globe of a town with an artsy vibe, eateries and craft breweries and, probably more yoga studios per capita than people, whatever. But here's the thing. That's only if you live in Ashland. Venture 5 miles in any direction and suddenly you're an extra in Deliverance. Okay, you half expect a guy with a banjo to pop out from behind a tree with his pants down. These surrounding towns literally have a KKK presence. It's true. If you look it up, it's like they really missed the memo that we're in the 21st century. Okay. And some of these, let's be real, they're dead end towns. They're so dead end. The only thing thriving there is the botany, the scenery. Okay. That's stunning. The rolling hills, the beautiful forests. It's like Mother Nature went all out, but the people, not so much. It's like Beauty and the Beast, but the Beast is the town's social scene. But whatever. Southern Oregon, bizarre mix of utopian small town vibes and, well, backwoods thriller movie sets. You go there for the fancy cheese and stay because, well, you took a wrong turn and you end up in a place where the local entertainment is watching the pig scramble, if you know what that is. It's a wild ride, you know, not just because of the mountain roads. What else did I do? Okay, the other day, the other day I did something that almost had me joining the ranks of what I consider the most terrifying species on the planet, Disney adults. The thing I hate the most. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm about as much of a Disney adult as I am a librarian at a convent, but okay, I went to Disneyland as an adult. I made several podcasts about how much I hate those people, but there's a difference between an adult day trip going to Disney versus a Disney adult. That's like saying you're a professional athlete because you jog to the fridge, calling me that, okay? We didn't go there to frolic in the Magic Kingdom like we're auditioning for the next Disney movie. Nah, dude, we were there for the adult rides, the ones that actually make your heart rate go above sleeping, you know? I wasn't there bulldozing through packs of children to get on It's a Small World like a Disney adult does, okay? We were there for the thrills, you know? And the beers. At Disneyland is a lot different when you're drinking beers, I'll say that much. But yeah, we had these passes from December that I wanted to use in December. I thought, why not? Let's just use them up here, before it turns into a pumpkin or whatever it does. You know what? It was fun. Hurtling through the air, screaming like you just saw your internet search history on a billboard. And yeah, the beers again, because if you're going to navigate through a sea of strollers and overzealous tourists, you might need a little liquid courage, but let's be clear. Okay, being at Disneyland does not make me a Disney adult. I mean, the real Disney adults. They're a breed of their own. They got the Mickey Mouse ears, the season passes, and tattoos of every Disney character ever created. And these tattoos look like a kindergarten art project. You know, they're all misaligned, mismatched, and colored like they used a box of crayons in the dark. Now, these are the people who think making a wish upon a star is a legitimate life strategy. They're out there throwing coins into fountains, whispering into the night sky, probably asking for more Disney tattoos or another season pass. They identify with these Disney characters on like a spiritual level, you know? Like, yes, I too am a misunderstood mermaid with a hoarding problem. But let me tell you, man, dealing with Disney adults, even as an adult, is an experience. It's like watching someone try to explain quantum physics to a cat. You're fascinated, but, you know, to recap, anyways, whatever. I went to Disneyland. Yep, I rode the scary rides and had some beer. But am I a Disney adult? Especially after all that shit I was talking about them on the podcast? No. I just dipped my toes into the Magic Kingdom, you know? I didn't go jumping in without a life jacket. But whatever. Anyways. Took some videos. And that had me thinking, too. So, now we got the Instagram story. Do you remember, if you're my age, 39, you know what America's Funniest Home Videos were, okay? That's the original YouTube, the original Instagram stories. But back then, it was just someone out there capturing their drunk uncle face planting into a wedding cake. And what did they do? They don't just chuckle and show it to their friends. No, they take this VHS tape, remember those, and ship it off into the void, like a message in a bottle, but the bottle is full of family humiliation. Now, picture the poor bastard who has to shift through these tapes, okay? This wasn't just a stroll through the slapstick lane. This is a deep dive into the twisted psyche of the American public, okay? You've got your garden variety nut shots and face plants, okay? Sure. But nestled in there are glimpses into human depravity. The kind of stuff that makes you question whether we really did evolve from primates or just get better at hiding our animal instincts. And the dicks, my God, imagine how many wieners were sent in. You know, it's like every Tom, Dick, and Harry with a camcorder thought their junk was America's Next Top Model. Sending that shit in just to see what happens. It's the original dick pic. Or Rick roll. A dick roll. But then, okay, after they're sifting through these this mountain of suburban Sodom and Gomorrah, they cobble together a family-friendly show. Imagine that. Okay, and then they fly these regular Joes out, and they're all dressed up in their Sears best to smile and wave for a chance to win was basically the equivalent of a used car. All while Bob Saget, of all people, Bob Saget stands there cracking jokes that are about as, I don't know, edgy as a bowling ball, knowing full well that as soon as the camera stopped rolling, he's off to dive into the comedy underworld slinging jokes that make a sailor blush. Okay, go watch the Aristocrats joke that he did if you don't know what I'm talking about. Funny motherfucker. Anyways, fast forward to today, and what do we got? YouTube, Instagram stories, whatever. The digital Wild West, where every schmuck with a phone can broadcast their shame to the world, okay? There's no more middleman. There's no more VHS lotteries. Just pure, unadulterated chaos at your fingertips. It's the hosts. There's hosts of these modern clip shows that just kick back, and they play a clip of some guy getting hit in the balls by a toddler and cash their check. You know, it's like America's Funniest Home Videos, but on steroids. And minus the charming facade of the family TV dad and a lot more ads. So that song remains the same. Humanity's relentless pursuit to laugh at itself, no matter how dark and raunchy the humor gets, with a twisted reflection of our society and ads everywhere. Man, that was in the 90s, okay? I know I love talking about the past in the 90s. That reminds me of I can't say his name. I won't say his name. I hope I don't say his name because I'm not going to realize I said it, and I certainly am not going to go back to edit it out. So here we go. We all had that one friend. In my case, it was a kid named Daniel. All right. Bit of a character. Again, you always have that one perverted friend in grade five who knows way too much about adult stuff, but doesn't actually know firsthand. You know what I mean? Anyways, whatever. One day, this kid, Daniel, he finds a piece of electrical equipment, I'm guessing. Something, it's a kind of signal detector. It was just this big, long yellow wand, plastic wand with a button on it that when you hit it, when you push the button, it would either beep or it wouldn't. That's how I could describe it. So he picks it up, he's pushing the button, he's holding it up to different things, trying to figure out what makes it beep. And naturally, being the kind of kid he was, he puts it to his dick, and then the thing beeps. So, of course, with grade five logic, it's obviously a penis detector. So he brings it to school and tells everyone about his penis detector. And he's going around basically sexually harassing everyone, putting this thing to their wieners and pushing the button just to conduct the test. And Rod, the, you know, kind of the class punching bag at the time, which is unfortunate, he didn't get a beep. So Daniel announces that Rod doesn't have a dick. And Rod, knowing the truth, but understandably not willing to prove it, all he could say is, I do so have a dick. I don't know. Why the fuck did we get into that? he had one of those birthmarks that you that are in right now, which is good. He had a big birthmark on his face. And I saw this movie recently. It's a Wonderful Knife. The actual title is called that. But there's an actor in it, this lady. Quite standout, I must say, because she's got a birthmark on her face the size of a small country. I mean, it's there. You can't miss it. I'm not making fun of it. I'm just saying it's like going to a 3D movie and trying not to flinch when stuff comes at your face. But whatever. Here's the thing. When you see something like that out there in the wild, the unwritten rule of society kicks in, okay? You got to pretend it's not there. All right? It's like when you see a dog at a restaurant. You want to look. You want to pet it. You want to go. You want to play it cool. You want to be like, oh, is there a poodle eating spaghetti next to me? Didn't notice. That's, ooh. But in the movie, this lady's doing her thing, acting her heart out, and she's there, and I'm there watching it in the audience, doing my best kind of impression of somebody that's totally unfazed, you know? It's an exercise in self-control. I'm just like, oh, a massive birthmark? Where? I was too busy being immersed in the plot, you know? But my brain, it's like a five-year-old in a magic show. It's just wanting to ask questions. But let's be real. It's a little bit weird, you know? We're all trying so hard not to stare that we end up looking like we're watching a tennis match, just back and forth, eyes darting between the birthmark and literally anything else. It's the social equivalent of trying not to laugh in church. The harder you try, the worse it gets. The actor, she's just doing her job, you know, she's thinking like, hey, I know they're, you know, it's not a new discovery. I think I know about this. It didn't just appear in the opening credits. It's this kind of weird dance between awkwardness that we all do, pretending we're on an episode of The Normal Show where everything is fine, nothing to see here, but deep down, we're all just a bunch of curious cats pretending we're too cool to be curious. It's like the adult version of ignore it and it'll go away. But it never does. It just sits there on her face. That's probably a fetish. I know we talked about that before, a list of weird fetishes. And my God, I shouldn't have done that because I thought I found the weird ones and you guys came at me with stuff that I didn't think would ever be possible. But I feel like a birthmark fetish would be a real thing, you know? That's probably going to be a genre pretty soon. Because now people with those particular markings are getting cast in more things. And sure, if they can get a leading role in a movie, eventually, you know, somebody's going to put her in porn. Not that particular person, but, you know, and I'm all for it, you know? Not because I'm digging myself deeper. Anyways, whatever. You see that a lot on Twitter. It's become the Wild West of porn bots. Okay, now I'm not saying I spend my day scrolling on Twitter. I've purposely, for the last over a year, not been active on there. I'm more active on the Compass app, you know? But these porn bots are evolving. They're like the Jurassic Park of social media. Okay, so I was on Twitter the other day, and there was this porn bot named Blowjobbin' Robin. I mean, that's hilarious. It's like if a superhero decided to take a very different career path, you know? When you hear a name like that, you're not exactly expecting the epitome of elegance and glamour. You know, you're thinking of somebody who has nail polish as cracked as their cracked phone screen, you know? But me being the curious cat I am, I'm like, okay, I got to see what Blowjob and Robin's all about. So I click it, and it's this glamour model, okay, looking like she stepped out of a high-end fashion ad. You know, she's decked out in this expensive lingerie, gorgeous Asian lady with giant fake boobs. It's like, okay, there is no way that this is Blowjob and Robin. But what a great name. You know, it's like finding out your local librarian is secretly a rock star. You know, it's kind of bizarre. It's unexpected. It's like, okay, Twitter porn bot, you've really outdone yourself with this name. It's like they're not even trying to blend in anymore. They're just out there bold as brass, like a neon sign. Yeah. The bots are leading the charge here. And now a word from our sponsor, Green Chef. I want to talk to you about something that's been a game changer for me, Green Chef. Now, if you know me, you know I'm about as skilled in the kitchen as a penguin is at flying. But Green Chef, man, they make me feel like I'm Gordon Ramsay's long-lost cousin. First off, let's talk about clean eating. Before Green Chef, my idea of a healthy meal was making sure the pizza had at least one vegetable on it. But these guys, they've got these chef-crafted, nutritionist-approved recipes that are like a symphony for your taste buds and a high-five for your body. It's not just about eating, though. It's about feeding your soul with certified organic fruits and veggies, organic cage-free eggs, and sustainably sourced seafood. It's like Mother Nature herself is in my kitchen whipping up a feast. And let me tell you about the variety. Now, I'm the kind of guy who gets bored eating the same thing twice. But Green Chef, they've got over 80 options every week. I've been on culinary adventures I didn't even know existed. One day, I'm tucked into a keto masterpiece. The next, I'm all about that Mediterranean life. It's like my kitchen is turned into the United Nations of flavors. But here's the thing. The gut and brain health meal plan. Now, I'm no scientist, but I know when I feel good. And after a few weeks of these nutrient-dense, science-backed meals, my gut isn't just happier, my brain feels like it's on cloud nine. It's like Green Chef knows the secret handshake between my stomach and my brain. I'm talking about meals that boost energy, reduce bloat, and make me feel like I could run in a marathon, or at least walk to the fridge without getting winded. So if you're like me and think cooking healthy is as complicated as assembling IKEA furniture without the instructions, you gotta give Green Chef a try. It's not just a meal kit. It's a ticket to happier, healthier you. And trust me, if I can make these meals and feel like a kitchen wizard, anyone can. So check out Green Chef. Your taste buds and your body will thank you. And who knows, you might just find yourself looking forward to cooking. I know, scary thought, right? But with Green Chef, it's a reality. Go to greenchef.com/60valleyboys and use code 60valleyboys to get 60% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. That's greenchef.com/60valleyboys and use code 60valleyboys to get 60% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Whatever, why the fuck are you listening to this? I don't know. Somebody online told me that I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah, no shit. I always tell you that. And I always give examples of why you shouldn't listen to me. But that's what a podcast is. Every podcast should honestly just be named Everybody's Dumb But Me. You know? And that was actually what I wanted to name this show. But seriously, every podcast is like its own little kingdom where the host is the all-knowing ruler. And the guests are just there to nod and laugh. Like, yeah, welcome to my audio realm where I'm the supreme overlord of knowledge. And you, the listener, are about to be enlightened by my vast wisdom. It's kind of what it is. Because, you know, how narcissistic do you have to be to think, I'm going to talk into a tin can and people are going to listen and I'm going to make money doing this. That's what a podcast is. I don't have guests, though, anymore. We haven't in a while, but gonna start doing that again. But that's what I'll do. I'll bring guests on just for the ride. You know, I'll allow them to occasionally interject an uh-huh or oh, that's so true. Like they're the court jesters, you know, there to amuse me, the king. It's like, tell me more about how you cracked the code on the best way to fold fitted sheets or the secret conspiracy behind why hot dogs come in packs of 10 and buns come in packs of 8, you know? That's all what a podcast is. It's just rambling. And every episode, it's like a little pat on the back from the host, you know, to ourselves. It's like, ah, that, dear listeners, is why I'm right. And everybody else is dumb. Everyone's dumb but me. That's the mantra of the podcasting world. You know, I don't know shit, but I'm good at pretending I know stuff. I am what you call a, oh God, what is that word? I don't know, superficial. It's when you have superficial intelligence on something, a pseudo-intellect, okay? I know a little bit about a lot of different things, but if we were to get into it, you find out that I don't know shit about it, okay? That is the person who is answering your questions on Yahoo Answers. And you know what? Let me confess to you something. I am one of the founding fathers of that chaos empire known as Yahoo Answers. Right from the beginning, okay? Back in the mid-2000s, you know, when the internet was still like the Wild West, but with more keyboard cowboys and less tumbleweeds, me and my buddies, all right? We were the merry pranksters of the digital age, okay? We got the same email about Yahoo Answers right before it came out, okay? And I know I'm sounding like a hipster here who sounds like I knew about a band before they even formed, but that's what it was. Yahoo Answers is this utopian idea where you can ask anything and get wisdom from the masses. But the thing is, the only masses they had were people like me and my friends who had about as much wisdom as a bag of rocks. And we started answering questions like we were the oracle of, like we were just the messiah of knowledge, okay? And the opposite was the truth. I remember this one time, a woman asked why her chihuahua would walk sideways. Now, normal people might suggest a vet visit, but not my buddy, you know? Again, he's like the reincarnation of a court jester. He told her to euthanize the dog. That was the answer. To this day, that is still the standard for that kind of thing. And this was day one of Yahoo Answers. But no. It wasn't just euthanize the dog. He suggested doing it with tap dancing shoes fitted with ice skate blades. Because disgusting. And the poor woman, she replies, with the understatement of the century, that's not good advice. It's like, yep. It's like telling somebody to fix a leaky faucet with a sledgehammer. Now, when I would do it, I used to answer questions on Yahoo Answers pretending I was Danny Glover. Yep, the beloved 90s actor. But by the mid-2000s, he was about as relevant as a VHS tape. You know, so it seemed plausible that this guy, the actor, just might be lurking on Yahoo Answers. People would be like, oh my God, I loved you in Lethal Weapon. Why are you such a jerk in real life? Because I would answer questions that are not real answers. It's like finding out Santa Claus is actually a mall Santa all year round. And one guy even messaged me. He's like, you're probably not even the real Danny Glover. Oh, man. Anyways, whatever. The unofficial kings of Yahoo Answers. It's like how a bartender gives out advice without the drinks. You know, just with a twist of nonsense. I don't know. It's kind of a red flag, somebody who used to do that. Everyone's talking about that these days. Red flags. You know, red flag, green flag. They're in all the memes, all that stuff. You know, what is a red flag? Let's think about this. A green flag would be having lifelong friends. Okay, that is the ultimate green flag. It's like saying, okay, I'm not a train wreck of a complete human being. Okay. All these people can attest to that I've known my whole life. Now, me, I've been in America for 9 years, but I've managed to hold on to the same group of friends I made when I first got off the plane, pretty much. Okay? It's like maintaining a hairstyle from the 90s. It's impressive, but also a little suspicious. But think about it, okay? These friends have stuck with me through thick and thin. It's like a loyal dog that's seen you do things that would make a therapist blush. They're the ones who know all the dark secrets, like and for you, it'd be like the time you're wearing leather pants to a club was a good idea, and you spent the whole night feeling like a sweaty sausage. Okay, these kind of friends, you know what I mean? Like back in Winnipeg, okay, I had friends from college when I first moved there. I lived in Winnipeg for 12 years, and I've had the same friends for 12 years, you know. And of course, there's new friends that come along. There's new friends that come along, and I love them just as much, but. Point being, I have a long track record of friendships. It's like having a resume that says not a complete disaster. And it's not that people without long-term friends are bad news, but let's be honest, it's like choosing between a used car that's had one careful owner versus one that's been passed around more times than a hot potato at a family barbecue. I opted for the G-rated euphemism there. Okay, so lifelong friends, what does that even mean? Like, they're the ones who remember all your questionable dating choices too. Okay, remember when you dated that person who thought a romantic date was a tour of, I don't know, the taxidermy collection? And again, new friends, they're like the shiny new additions to your social circle. It's like getting the new iPhone. Cool and exciting. But they don't know about the time you accidentally flash your neighbors because you forgot to close the blinds. Whatever. Anyways, my point being, that's a green flag. Now, a red flag is kind of the opposite. Okay? These are the people whose best friend is always, always, always someone they just met. Their friendships have a shorter shelf life than a carton of milk left out in the sun. You know exactly who I'm talking about. These are the people who cycle through friends like a player goes through Tinder matches. 1 week, they're thick as thieves with someone they met in a Starbucks, and the next, it's like a magic trick. They're gone. Except the only thing disappearing is their ability to maintain a stable relationship. Let's get real here. There's always some soap opera-level drama about why their former bestie is now on the do not call list. Okay, it's like they're collecting enemies the way that some people collect stamps, or in their case, restraining orders. It's like, oh, that Becky bitch, yeah, don't talk to her anymore. She didn't like my tweet from 2019. But it's not just a red flag. It's like a parade of red flags, you know, like a bullfighter convention. You start wondering if they have more ex-friends than a dictator has ex-advisors. It's like they're running a friendship Ponzi scheme, always recruiting new ones before the old ones catch on. Man, if you thought their friendship history was a roller coaster, wait till you hear about their love life. It's like they're trying to set a world record for most exes in a decade. Every romantic encounter is like a speed dating round gone wrong. The other person's always like, oh, next please. Now, I'm not saying that these are bad people, but they might have more red flags than a communist parade. You can't help but to judge just a little bit. You know, it's like watching someone juggle chainsaws. You're impressed, but you're concerned for everybody around them. But whatever, man, that's a, life's kind of a grand circus that way. There's clowns jumping out of the tiny car. And for these people, you can't help but to count how many more keep coming out. It makes you think, maybe they're not the best investment for your emotional 401k. It's like buying a stock that's more volatile than my aunt after two martinis. Sure, it might pay off, but you're going to end up with a headache and a lot of regrets. But whatever, man. Sometimes these people find each other. You know, you got that toxic tango where two certifiably crazy people find each other and decide, hey, let's be best friends. Or even worse, let's date. It's like watching two comets on a collision course. You know it's going to end in a fiery spectacle, but you can't help but to look away. See, this kind of pairing is less like peanut butter and jelly, more like gasoline in a lit match. It's when crazy meets crazy. It's not just a friendship or a romance. It's a mutual validation society where sanity checks are as rare as quiet moments at a toddler's birthday. They hype each other up in what can only be described as a toxic circle jerk. It's like they're in their own little bubble and the air inside is 100% pure delusion. All right? Let's say this. One of them comes up with an idea so wild, it makes jumping out of a plane with an umbrella seem like a reasonable decision. Instead of the sane response, which is maybe we shouldn't do that, the other goes, brilliant. What could possibly go wrong? It's the blind leading the blind. And they both think they're the visionary. And the drama, man, it's like living in a reality TV show. There's no production crew. You know, their arguments get more explosive than a science experiment gone wrong. But the magnets, they're always back together, ready for the next round of this emotional roller coaster. So, whatever. When you meet someone new, always ask about their best friends and how long they've known each other. Okay? It's like doing a background check, but for crazy. If their longest friendship is more recent than the latest iPhone model, that's your cue to run. It's a sign they might be collecting ex-friends faster than a hoarder collects newspapers. But whatever. Let's go back to the dynamic duo of disaster here. When you see those two get together, it's like a spectacle. They feed off each other's madness like two hyenas cackling in the moonlight. It's a symphony of dysfunction. You know, everybody's encouraging each other's worst impulses. It's like, you think it's a good idea to text your ex at 2 a.m.? Absolutely. Let me draft that message right now. It's like, in a weird way, they're perfect for each other, like two villains in a comic book. They join forces and the world trembles. But instead of world domination, they're aiming for the championship in the bad decision Olympics. Whatever, man. No judgment, but maybe just a little bit. You know what? At least they're not the self-proclaimed empath. This is a weird phenomenon going on right now. The people who shout, I'm an empath, louder than a vegan at a barbecue. Okay, they're not just empathetic, okay? These are the emotional exhibitionists flashing their feelings at every opportunity. You know exactly what I'm talking about. This is a new thing, or it's not that new. People have been using this term for a few years, but like the empath, the self-proclaimed empath, will burst into a conversation about emotions with the subtlety of a bull in a china shop, declaring they're an empath. Okay? It's like their version of dropping a celebrity's name at a party. It's like, oh, you're sad about your goldfish dying? Let me one-up you about how deeply I'm feeling your pain. It's like I'm psychically connected to your fish. But let's be real. How much of this empath is about being in tune with other people's feelings, and how much of it is just a crafty way of turning every situation into a you fest? You know, it's like they find someone's emotional scape, and instead of offering a Band-Aid, they break into a full blown opera about how this is causing them, the empath, deep soul crushing agony. You know, and the trauma, the overuse of trauma these days doesn't help either. Okay, that term has been used more loosely than the morals at a Vegas bachelor party. It's like, oh, your barista misspelled your name? Tell me more about your trauma. The word's been so diluted, it's like vodka after an ice melt. It's still bitter, but not as strong. Now, I kind of want to know what the psychology is behind these empaths and genuinely what they're feeling. And I don't mean the psychology like of being empathetic. I mean the psychology of self-identifying as an empath and hijacking anybody's trauma dumping to be about themselves. You know, and they're usually the same people who love diagnosing everyone else who disagrees with them as a narcissist. It's another word that's overthrown. It's like you got a PhD from the University of Armchair Psychology. It's like, what's that? You didn't want to hear about my third eyes, tears from the fifth name, classic narcissist. So when someone comes at you waving their empath flag like they're leading a parade, maybe take a step back, because in their world, every tear shed is a potential bath they can luxuriate in. I don't know, man. They're not just audience members. They want to take the lead role in someone else's tragedy. So, but again, that's for the self-proclaimed empath. It's not about connecting with your emotions. It's about hijacking them for their own one-person emotional circus. Okay, let's get into fucking... let's do some headlines. Everybody seems to like those. Bear with me. Okay. Oh, God, here's one. Okay, for everybody that tagged me in this, messaged me it, sent a text, a voice message, MySpace message, I get it, okay? It wasn't me. Here's a headline. Excessively farting passenger forces American Airlines flight to turn around. Okay, I get why you would want me to see about this. Now, let's paint the picture. You're thousands of feet in the air, cabin pressure is already messing with your senses, and then suddenly it hits you. A smell so foul, so aggressively pungent, it's like your nose is being assaulted by an invisible skunk. This isn't your garden variety farting, it's apocalyptic. It's like the passenger's butt decided to throw a surprise party and everybody's nostrils were forced to be there. This guy must have been on some kind of demonic diet. You know, what did he eat? Concoction of garlic, onions, and every bean known to man? It's like his digestive system is a chemistry lab and some meth addict lit a match in there. Imagine the horror of the other passengers. Okay, there you are, casually flipping through the in-flight magazine, dreaming about duty-free shopping, and bam, you're suddenly in a horror movie where the monster is an invisible gas cloud. And people are frantically pressing the call button like it's a game show buzzer. Excuse me, stewardess, can I get a parachute? Because everyone jumping out of the plane, that seems more preferable than another whiff of what's going on below row 13. The poor flight attendants, man, they're trained for medical emergencies and unruly passengers, but farting? This is chemical warfare now. They're marching down these aisles with air fresheners like soldiers with bayonets, you know? But it's Febreze. It's like a scene from Saving Private Ryan. But they're just trying to save the passengers from this wrath of this one man's bowels. And of course, we got to give a thought to the pilot, you know? He's thinking like he's seen it all. Turbulence? No problem. Lightning strikes? Bring it on. But nothing, and I mean nothing, could prepare him for the stench tsunami hitting the cockpit. It's like, yeah, Houston, we got a problem. Oh, my God. And then the plane has to turn around. And the captain makes a call nobody ever expected to make, you know? Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking due to unforeseen circumstances. Namely, this dude's gastrointestinal apocalypse. We're heading back to the airport. That bro's probably just sitting there, headphones on, blissfully unaware that he's etched his name into the annals of aviation history. Now, I imagine this guy getting off the plane, you know? He's the JFK of farting. Everybody remembers where they were when it happened. He steps into the airport, and he's an instant celebrity, but for all the wrong reasons. You know, he's like walking the red carpet, but instead of flashing cameras... I can't. It's too fucking stupid. Let's just go to the next one. What's the next one? Okay. Here's the next one. Oklahoma bill would ban sending sexy selfies unless you're married. Okay. All right. So this one is so Oklahoma, it should come with a banjo soundtrack. Oklahoma bill would ban sending sexy selfies unless you're married. Okay. That's right. In a world where we've got bigger fish to fry, Oklahoma's like, hold my moonshine. We got to put an end to this spicy picture pandemic. All right. First of all, we're talking about a bill, an actual piece of legislation that's targeting the time-honored tradition of sending a cheeky selfie to your sweetheart, you know? It's like Oklahoma looked at the possible issues to tackle, like education and healthcare, infrastructure, whatever, and said, nope, our top priority is making sure Aunt Mildred doesn't get a sassy pic from Uncle Bob. This bill is basically trying to turn Oklahoma into the no-fun zone, the kind of place where the most exciting thing to do on a Friday night is watch paint dry. That's Oklahoma. While fully clothed, of course, and in separate rooms, apparently. It's like they want to enforce a dress code on your phone. Excuse me, sir, but your phone is showing so much skin. I'm going to need you to cover up these pixels. And how do they even enforce this? What are the logistics here? Who's going to be the selfie police? Imagine getting a knock on your door. It's like, open up. This is the Oklahoma Selfie Squad. We got a report that you've been sending risque snaps of your ankles. You know, and it's like the digital version of the fashion police, but with less style and more judgment. And the irony here is thicker than a bowl of Oklahoma grits. You've got your folks who probably preach about freedom and small government, and yet here they are trying to regulate what you can and can't send from your own phone. It's like saying, okay, we want government so small that it fits in your bedroom and judges your photo angles. And think about the implications for dating in Oklahoma, okay? You're trying to spice things up, maybe send a little flirty picture, and suddenly you're worried the FBI is going to kick down your door because you showed too much shoulder. Romance in Oklahoma is now like a game of battleship, but every shot is a miss because you're playing in the dark and under a blanket with your clothes on. And in fairness, in Oklahoma, you're probably sending it to your sister. So whatever. This bill is like trying to put a chastity belt on the internet. Good luck with that, bro. In the meantime, the rest of the world, we're over here living in the 21st century. You know, we're sending titties and dicks all over the place like it's a modern mating dance. So whatever. To all the lovebirds in Oklahoma, you might want to invest in some carrier pigeons, you know, just to make sure that you're not sending anything too scandalous. Wouldn't want to ruffle any pigeon feathers. Is there more? Two more. Okay. Oof. California woman who fatally stabbed boyfriend over 100 times avoids prison. God, I can't read. Okay. I mean, if that doesn't make you do a double take, I don't know what will. Okay? This has got a few twists in it. First off, stabbing over 100 times? You know, what's she trying to do? Set a new world record for most stabs? It's like she thought she was in some sort of like macabre infomercial. But wait, there's more. If you act now, I'll throw in an extra 50 stabs. And she avoids prison? How? How did she get a jail out of free card up her sleeve? Was the judge a big fan of her knife skills? It's like, oh, well, you know, I've always appreciated a woman who knows her way around cutlery. Case dismissed. It's like Monopoly meets Law and Order. I don't even know the picture here. You got a woman who turns her boyfriend into a human pincushion, and then the legal system's like, eh, let's not be too hasty with the prison thing. Like, what's the reasoning here? Did she convince them it was an intense form of acupuncture gone wrong? It's like, Your Honor, I was merely trying to relieve his neck and back pain, but I got carried away. And man, the courtroom drama must have been a scene out of a telenovel. The defense attorney channeling his inner Matlock probably argued, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, yes, she stabbed him over 100 times, but let's focus on the positive. She stopped at 100. That is restraint. And the jury, they were probably like, well, you know, she seems like a nice girl. Maybe she's a little stab happy. She's kind of white. So let's give her a break. It's like they were judging a baking contest, you know, not a murder trial. It's like, well, she overdid it with the stabbing, but her courtroom decor was impeccable. 9 out of 10, would have quit again. But man, in the end, this woman's walking free. leaving everyone scratching their heads. You know, it's like the universe decided to play a game of legal Mad Libs. California woman, 100 stabs, no prison. If you ever need proof that reality is stranger than fiction, there it is. In a world where a woman can turn her boyfriend into a Swiss cheese replica and avoid prison, man, who needs horror movies? This reality is scary enough. Okay, there's one more. Man accused of killing neighbor over loud snoring. All right, another murder one here. Okay. I guess that's it. A world where people get into fistfights over parking spots or whose dog shit on whose lawn, this guy takes neighborly disputes to a whole new terrifying level. Okay, first of all, how loud was his snoring? And was his neighbor sleeping or auditioning for a role of the chainsaw in a horror movie? I mean, we've all had our share of noisy neighbors. The ones who seem to be hosting a clog dancing competition at 3 a.m., but this is something else. I can't even picture this, you know? Lying in bed, clock's ticking, and all I can hear is a guttural symphony of snores coming through the wall. It's like trying to sleep next to a hibernating bear with a sinus problem. Fine. Most of us, we just put in some earplugs, maybe bang on the wall a little bit. If we're feeling really adventurous, leave a passive-aggressive no. But not this guy. No, he decides it's time to reenact a scene from a horror movie because Mr. Snorlot next door is ruining his beauty sleep. And let's think about the cops showing up here, right? Always think about that. It's like, sir, can you explain why you attacked your neighbor? And he's like, well, officer, it was self-defense against his nasal passages. You know, it's like a scene out of a dark comedy, but it's real. The whole incident is like a cautionary tale about the dangers of sleep apnea and bad neighbor relations. It's like, forget the neighborhood watch. We need a neighborhood snore patrol, you know? Excuse me, sir, we've had reports of disruptive snoring. Here's a pamphlet about sleep clinics. Probably be the same people who police selfies in Oklahoma. Kind of a ridiculous, whatever. What would the moral of that story be? Maybe invest in some soundproofing or get a good pair of earplugs. Maybe talk to your neighbor before going full villain on them. I think I'm running out of steam here. All right, let's end it there. That's enough of this garbage for now. Sorry for the delay between episodes. Let's see, what's the time like on this one? Did I make it up? No? Okay, well. All right, this one's a long one. It's a double, we'll call it. Be sure to follow us online. I am at Dave Weasel across the board. I did not buy my blue check mark. That shit is lame. Make sure you follow the podcast at Valley Boys Pod on Twitter, at Valley Boys Podcast on Instagram. Instagram's the only way to reach me, by the way. If you send Dave Weasel on there a message, I'm not going to read it. Yeah, okay, that's it. From Reseda, California, good night. And now a word from our sponsor, Pretty Litter. All right, let's talk about the unsung hero of cat ownership, kitty litter. Specifically, Pretty Litter. Now, I'm no Dr. Doolittle, but when it comes to my cats doing the happy dance, that is a good day. The problem is, cats are more mysterious than a magician's hat. You never know what's going on in their fuzzy little brains. That's where Pretty Litter swings in like a superhero. First off, this stuff is like the Navy SEALs of litter. It traps odor faster than you could say, stinky cat bathroom. I mean, we've all been there, right? Your cat does its business and suddenly your place smells like a porta potty at a punk rock music festival. But with Pretty Litter, it's more like your cat just lit a fancy little cat candle in there. Now let's talk differences. If traditional litter is a clunky old car, Pretty Litter is a sleek, shiny sports car. This stuff has ultra-absorbent crystals. We're talking less mess, less dust. It's the litter equivalent of a spotless kitchen after a five-course meal. And these magic crystals last up to a month. That means less scooping, less trudging through the trash, and doing more time doing whatever you want with your life. But here's the magic. Pretty Litter changes colors. Now, I'm not talking mood ring changes here. I'm talking health detective. It's like having a mini cat doctor in your litter box, giving you the heads up on potential health issues like urinary tract infections or kidney shenanigans. It's peace of mind in a bag of litter. Because let's be honest, our cats are, they're like little fluffy enigmas and we need all the help we can get. And to top it off, Pretty Litter gets delivered right to my door. No more hauling giant containers of litter around that announce to the world, yes, I own a cat, and yes, it drops dumps. This stuff is light, easy, and space-saving. It's like having litter on tap without the bulky keg. So there you have it. Pretty Litter, making life easier, homes fresher, and giving us cat owners a little insight into the mysterious world of our feline friends. Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on my cat's health and keeps odors down. You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as I do. Go to prettylitter.com/valleyboys and use code valleyboys to save 20% on your first order. That's prettylitter.com/valleyboys. Use code valleyboys to save 20%. prettylitter.com/valleyboys, code valleyboys. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.